The dwelling of F.L. Pierce at Gabriella was destroyed by fire, and his little daughter Eunice was burned to death. He thought she had escaped with her mother and learned only too late that she had not. He heard only one scream from the child. Florida Times-Union, December 1892.
This newspaper story from 1892 sounds tragically similar to a story that might be heard on the local news today. However, the story is from the town of Gabriella, a thriving community with a population of 300, located in southeast Seminole County, Florida, between Oviedo and Winter Park. Gabriella no longer exists, but the lives of its early frontier residents was surprisingly similar to ours. They enjoyed patriotic celebrations amid a controversial war. In their case, the war was the Spanish-American War.
The annual picnic on the Little Econlockhatchie Creek is over, and it was better this time than ever before. The Stars and Stripes floated over the ground and was lustily cheered by the crowds. The latest war news was obtained by the picnickers from the Times-Union by this reporter. Florida Times-Union, May 1898.
Today, the names of families who farmed, hunted, and lived in Gabriella are found in the local street names: Rouse Road, Dodd Road, Wrights Road. The Florida Times-Union noted the events of their personal lives, and they remind us of our own families.
People are getting ready to attend a wedding early in September. The high contracting parties are Willis Rouse of Gabriella, a bachelor of 40 summers, known among the hunters from Lake Harney to the Everglades. The bride-elect is Miss Susie Hancock, who was born and reared at her present home east of Orlando. She is 16 years old, a sister of the well-known Jonah Hancock. Their farm is well-stocked with all kinds of poultry and swine. This being the only daughter and the first of the children to marry, a regular festival is anticipated. Florida Times-Union, August 1897.
Sometimes the Gabriella of the 1900s was way ahead of the 21st century. Original residents of Oviedo, planning a trip to Orlando for shopping or to Winter Park for business, would board the Oviedo-Winter Park Railroad and enjoy a smooth ride to the cities, avoiding the roads. For them, mass transit wasn't a dream called Sunrail, it was a reality. The train they rode was nicknamed the Dinky Line, and the engineer, Walter Preston Watson, would occasionally stop at the small community of Gabriella to allow passengers to alight and pick wildflowers and oranges from the groves. Today, that trip would be made by car along State Road 426. The Dinky Line is gone, and so is Gabriella, but out your car window you could see the Progress Energy Corporation Maintenance Yard on what was the site of Gabriella's post office. Their orange groves and farms have been replaced by housing developments and the expressway. The cattle and free-roaming hogs have disappeared, giving way to strip malls and fast food restaurants all the way to Goldenrod. On Saturday, December 5th, 2009, the Seminole Historical Commission dedicated the Gabriella Historical Marker, located at the corner of Bear Gully Road and Aloma Avenue, which is State Road 426. At the ceremony, Marie Birch of the Goldenrod Historical Society and a resident with deep roots in the area spoke to me about Gabriella.
Gabriella, it was a thriving, very small area. Listed as having one of the earlier schools in Seminole County, it also had a post office, a country store, and a packing house. Also, the Dinky Line train ran through Gabriella.
Do you have any idea where they got the nickname Dinky Train?
I do not know.
It was officially the Oviedo Winter Park Railroad.
Yes, it was, yes. And I grew up knowing it as the Dinky Line. My mother rode the Dinky Line train from Goldenrod to Winter Park to go to college at Rollins. Her family, the homestead, was on Bear Gully Lake, the Mathers homestead, that is. My grandfather, who was Solomon Mathers, as a little boy, 10 years old, helped his father transport by wagon goods into Orlando to the stores. And of course, this took many, many hours, usually a day in, spending the night in Orlando with some relatives there, and then returning the next day to the home place.
One of Marie Birch's pioneering ancestors had a scary encounter that was reported in the newspaper.
While en route to a nearby neighbor's house yesterday, Mrs. S. E. Mathers suddenly came upon two very large rattlesnakes engaged in a terrific battle. After watching the snakes for a few moments, she ran toward home and came near being bitten by a third rattler that was lying where she had just passed. She called to her husband, who came with his gun. Mr. Mathers says the snakes made no attempt to bite each other, but would bump their heads together, rise and twist around each other, fall to the ground, untangle, and go at each other again. He dispatched the combatants with one shot. Florida Times Union, October 1898.
Few local people know more about life in Gabriela than Oviedo resident Jim Richardson. He is a collector of artifacts from the earliest Indians to the remnants of the turpentine industry. In the 1970s, he purchased the homestead of Gabriela's Robert and Viola Croom. Here's Jim Richardson.
Anyway, we had some friends out there named Viola and Robert Croom. Robert Croom had passed away. I understand that he was the mayor, the sheriff, owner of most of the land in Gabriela. He was a tough guy. He was tough. There was a Florida Naval store on the property. You know, you could buy everything from bearings to grease and coal. There was a guest house on the property built by the railroad, 1893 maybe, 1896, somewhere in there. The house we lived in, when we moved there, there was virtually no electricity. There were sinks hung on the walls, and a drain pipe that ran through the floor into a little trough that ran outside from underneath the house, outside to the edge of the property and drained. There was a pitcher pump out on the front end of the house. But there was a lake at the Croom that was, maybe 15 acres. But good fishing and lots of hunting. I mean, lots of duck, summer duck, deer, hog, turkey, snakes, lots of snakes. In fact, in the roster of stuff that the Crooms brought in the 20s from Bowling Green were chickens and hogs and black snakes and rat snakes. They brought the snakes here to keep the rodents down.
The source of Gabriela's name has been a matter of conjecture, but Jim Richardson has discovered one possible explanation.
The original owner, he had a daughter named Gabriela. He was Spanish. He had turpentine leases and he raised mules. Osceola, the chief of the Seminole Indians, married her. So he actually, I'm convinced, spent time in Gabriela. And I don't know that it was named Gabriela after Osceola's or before. Osceola did winter in Winter Park, for we have some artifacts that belong to Osceola. I think it would be easy enough to research, but that's my understanding.
The pine forests of North and Central Florida supported the lucrative turpentine industry after the Civil War until the 1920s and 30s. Gabriela was one of the sites for gathering and processing sap from the trees. Jim Richardson describes the items he's found on his property and their function in harvesting turpentine.
There was a cabin down by the lake and maybe 12 or 13 small buildings that were outhouses for a turpentine operation. Most of the floors were brick. They had brick that dated back, I had a couple of people tell me, to the War Between the States. And I couldn't figure out what that glaze was on the brick. And what that was actually the turpentine. After it had been cooked, they would pour it on top of the bricks like a wax so that they could be easily swept, almost like an linoleum floor. And I unfortunately don't have the still. That would be kind of neat to have. I have the tools. There were scrapers that were rounded. Some of them pointed rounded like a football with a handle on the end. That rounded edge that looked like a football would sit inside the barrels and they could scrape out the turpentine from where they had stored it. And I have something that's really rare. And that's an insert for the clay pots. Most of the folks think that the clay, the red clay and yellow clay pots, were what they hung on a nail and collected the sap with, which wasn't the case. They had a tin insert, and that sat inside the clay pot. They wouldn't take the clay pot. They would just put a new tin insert into the clay pot, take the tin insert, put it in the wagon, take it back, and that would be heated so that they could pour it out. And it was, they turned it into turpentine, they turned it into a moles. You could take, you know, the raw sap and cook it down and then pour it into a mole, and you'd have a copy of anything like plastic almost.
The turpentine industry was a vital part of the economy in early Florida, but it had a dark side. The state government had few prisons and tight budgets after the Civil War. By 1876, Florida had joined all the southern states in leasing convicts to private corporations for labor. This kept production costs low for the business owners and brought much-needed revenue to the state coffers. Unfortunately for the convicts, it brought miserable living conditions and harsh treatment. According to the Florida Historical Quarterly, most Florida convicts spent their days in the palmetto scrub and pine forests harvesting tar and pitch and producing turpentine spirits. For Florida turpentine operators, the convict lease system was ideal. Labor costs were fixed and low. Problems associated with labor turnover and unionization were non-existent. But most important, convicts could be driven at a pace free workers would not tolerate. In 1912, journalist Mark Goodnow visited the pine forests of Florida, seeking information for an article he was writing on the turpentine industry. Goodnow's findings appeared in a 1915 expose entitled Turpentine, Impressions of the Convicts' Camps of Florida. It shocked the nation. In his report, he describes convict labor at a camp located near Gabriela.
In one turpentine camp near Gabriela in Orange County, the captain of the camp, H.F. Douglas, made the men run to and from the work site, located 8 miles from the stockade. The pace was set each morning and evening by Douglas, who was always mounted. Upon inspection of the camp by state officials, they realized that Douglas did not provide the convicts with shoes, and found the men's feet splintered and swollen from the leaves of the saw palmettos they encountered on their daily runs. Untreated, the lacerations produced intense inflammation, sometimes blood poisoning, and even death. According to one convict, the men were always in intense pain.
Criticism of convict leasing in Florida peaked after 1908, when graphic descriptions of brutality and suffering in the camps caused many newspaper editors and civic leaders to join the Florida Humane Society in a campaign against leasing. The state's policy of leasing convict labor finally ended in 1919. This bitter episode in Florida history was one small part of life in Gabriela. There, its many lakes were full of fish and forests were teeming with game, and there were flourishing groves and farms. We remember the people who fought freeze and fire and drought to build a future that became our present. In 1887, the Florida Times Union wrote,
Gabriela is located between Oviedo and Winter Park, and the natural features of the county are conceded by all who have visited this section to be nowhere surpassed. The weather continues delightful, making residents prize more and more their pleasant Florida home.
The town of Gabriela may have disappeared, but we remember the hard-working families who struggled and celebrated, just as we do in our beautiful Seminole County home. The Florida Times Union newspaper quotes were prepared by Karen Jacobs for the Seminole County Museum of History and read by George McManus. Special thanks to historian and columnist Jim Robison for contributions to this program. For Central Florida Matters, this is Desta Horner.
On the CMF website, check out the pictures Desta posted about Gabriela, as well as a Google map locating the area for you. And we posted the extended interviews with Marie Birch and Jim Richardson. While you're on the CMF site, please leave a comment about the series, History of Our Communities. We'd like to know your thoughts about the series. When leaving an online comment, please note that we do moderate the process, so there will be a slight delay before yours will be posted.
The archives section of our site is growing steadily, and we encourage you to visit the history category. There you'll hear more content about interesting pieces of local history, places, and events bringing meaning to Central Florida.